Welcome and thank you for standing by. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. During the question and answer session, please press star 1 to ask a question. Today's conference is being recorded. If you have any objections, you may disconnect at this time. Now we'll turn the meeting over to Michael Herndon. You may begin.
Thank you very much, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome. I'm Michael Herndon with FDA's Media Relations staff. Thanks and welcome to this briefing on the tomatoes and salmonella, the outbreak. Our three speakers this afternoon are Dr. David Alchison, Associate Commissioner for Food, FDA, Dr. Stephen Sunloff, Director, Center for Food Safety and Applied Nutrition, and Dr. Robert Toke, the Deputy Director, Division of Foodborne Bacterial and Myocardial Diseases with the CDC. Now, we also have subject experts, FDA subject experts available today. They are Matthew Eccles, Director, America's Staff, Office of International Programs, and Dr. Stephen Solomon, Deputy Director, Office of Regional Operations. Now, we will have a brief question and answer segment after the opening remarks, but at this time, I'd like to turn it over to Dr. David Atchison.
Thank you, Mike. This is David Atchison, Associate Commissioner for Foods at FDA. Welcome, everybody, to the media conference today. We will follow our previously used format in which ask CDC to give an update and then we'll come back to FDA and we'll then provide you an update with current activities at FDA. So with that, I'll hand it over to Dr. Toke at CDC.
Thank you very much, David. This is Dr. Robert Toke at the CDC in Atlanta, Georgia. I'm Deputy Director of the Division of Foodborne Bacterial and Mycotic Diseases. Thank you for joining us this afternoon. We continue to get reports of illness every day. The case count today is 1,017 cases, all culture confirmed, reported from 41 states, the District of Columbia, and Canada, with 203 hospitalizations. This ongoing outbreak is now one of the largest outbreaks of salmonellosis ever in the United States, and is the largest foodborne outbreak of any sort in the last 10 years based on the number of culture-confirmed cases. CDC, state health officials, and the FDA have been working very hard to find the source of salmonella illnesses, and a large number of people have been doing a great deal of effort, and I'm grateful to all of them for everything that has been going on and continues to go on. we have had an evolving information set around the investigations that have been going on, and last week we added to the list of potential candidates, in addition to tomatoes, which continue to be a prime suspect, we added to that list the jalapeno peppers and cilantro. And now, based on the most recent information that we're assembling, and I should stress we're continuing to gather information, we thought it was important to provide new interim guidance for people at greatest risk for salmonellosis. Now, those people are those who have impaired immune systems, or the infants, or elderly persons. And our specific recommendation is that until health officials know that the contaminated product or products are no longer on the market, these persons with increased risk of severe infection, infants, elderly persons, and those with impaired immune systems should avoid eating raw jalapeno peppers or raw serrano peppers. Now, in addition, the previous recommendations about eating raw tomatoes only those that are on the FDA safety list continue. We are making no change or recommending no change in the consumer guidelines concerning tomatoes. We would note that in addition to those at high risk avoiding eating raw jalapeno peppers, other persons who want to reduce the risk of salmonella infection can take similar precautions. We arrive at this now because of a number of investigations that have been going on, and in the accumulated information from a number of these has pointed increasingly to the role that jalapeno peppers and possibly closely related peppers may be playing as part of the investigation. We were clear that jalapeno peppers caused some of the illnesses in the outbreak. It it is not clear that they explain all illnesses. Thank you very much. Let me turn it back to you, Dr. Acheson.
Thanks, Rob. I appreciate that. This is David Acheson again. I would just like to echo the what Dr. Phelps has just said in terms of consumer advice. FDA supports that approach based on the evidence that you've just heard from Dr. Phelps at CDC. With that, I'd like to hand it over to Dr. Sumloff, who is going to provide you with an update on what FDA is currently doing in terms of activities to further pursue the origins of this outbreak. So, Dr. Sumloff, over to you.
Thank you, David. This is Steve Sumloff with the Center for Food Safety and Applied Nutrition. Basically, we are following the same game plan as for follow-up inspections as we did with the tomato. So we are inspecting. We are going to the source that has been identified by the CDC, and from there, for instance, if it's a restaurant, we are tracing back through the chain of distribution to determine, as we did with tomatoes, where those peppers may have originated from. If it is to a distribution center, then we will trace forward to see where else product may have gone. And so basically, it's the same kind of investigation and trace back and also trace forward that we initiated with tomatoes. And some of those investigations with tomatoes, by the way, are still ongoing. So we are doing both tomatoes and peppers, serranos, and jalapenos. We are doing extensive sampling along the way so that we are picking up samples and they will be submitted to laboratories for analysis to determine whether or not the Salmonella St. Paul has contaminated those samples. At this point, we have not found any positives either with tomatoes for Salmonella St. Paul or with the peppers, but the peppers are just starting. We are working with the states. The states are heavily involved in doing some sampling and inspection for us. Again, we will be continuing to work with CDC. They provide us with the information, and we take the strongest cases where we think we have the most solid information that would lead back to a source and work specifically on those, and we will go forward in this manner, similar to the way we have with the tomatoes, and that's pretty much where we are at. And I'll turn it back to Mike.
Thank you, Dr. Sumloff. At this time, ladies and gentlemen, we will take your questions, and as always, please limit yourself to one question and one follow-up. And also, please state your name and affiliation. Operator, we'll take the first question.
Okay, thank you. We will now begin the question and answer session. If you would like to ask a question, please press star 1. Please unmute your phone and record your name clearly when prompt. Your name is required to introduce your question. To withdraw your request, press star 2. Again, press star 1 to ask a question. One moment, please, for the first question. First question comes from Justin Blum. Your line is open.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I've got a question to follow up. The question is, in the announcement put out by CDC today, it says the accumulated data from all investigations indicate that jalapeno peppers cause some illnesses, but they do not explain all illnesses. Can you say the same of tomatoes? Do you know for certain that tomatoes have caused some illnesses? And if not, is the evidence now more strongly pointing toward peppers than it is toward tomatoes?
This is Robert Tokes at the CDC. Thank you for your question, Justin. The information about the tomatoes and the information about the jalapeno peppers comes from two different sorts of studies. And for tomatoes, we have the first case control study, which strongly indicated a risk associated with tomatoes, and our second case control study, which I haven't described in any detail, but that showed an association between illness and eating several food items, including fresh jalapenos, raw tomatoes, and cilantro. without implicating one of them as the single source, nor eliminating any of them as a possible source. The information about jalapenos comes from the recent cluster investigations, particularly of three large clusters of illness that have been investigated, and in those the illness was linked to items, all three cases, the items containing fresh jalapeno peppers. In one of them, the item also included fresh tomatoes. In none of them did the item include cilantro. So the information is somewhat different. We are quite sure that that with neither tomatoes nor jalapeno explain the entire outbreak at this point. We consider that the evidence implicating tomatoes was earlier in the outbreak is strong, and the evidence that suggests there's illness associated with jalapeno peppers from the cluster investigations is also quite strong.
So, just to be clear, though, can you say that there are cases where tomatoes caused illnesses, like you are saying that there are cases where jalapenos are linked to illnesses?
We're presuming that both of them have caused illness.
And so the follow-up question is, when people go out to eat and have then later contracted salmonella, is it always Mexican food, or are there other types of foods that people have eaten before contracting salmonella?
It has been a number of different foods. It is not always one ethnic food type.
Thank you. Thanks, Justin.
Thank you.
Next question, please.
Next question is from Allison Aubrey. Your line is open.
Oh, hi, thanks. So in the first case-controlled study, you said that about 80% of people reported eating tomatoes versus the control group, where it would be less than half. Can you give me some similar numbers on what you found in the case-control with the jalapenos? I know separately you have the cluster, but going back to the case-control study, what percentage of people then reported eating jalapenos compared to control?
Thank you very much. Let me explain that the recent CDC case-control study interviewed over 400 persons, including 144 who were ill since June 1st, and 287 healthy controls. A healthy control is somebody who lives near the ill person but did not experience any recent foodborne illness. And each of them would be interviewed concerning a number of different food items that they ate and different places that they might have eaten it. In the second case control study, tomatoes were quite popular among both the people who were ill, not quite as popular among people who remained well. Also, there were detailed questions about different sorts of other foods that they might have eaten. As I indicated, both the hot peppers, particularly jalapenos, were more commonly reported by the cases than by the controls, as was cilantro, but neither of them were reported by more than half of the cases. We recognize that it's often the case that someone might eat something that might have a spice or an item like jalapeno or cilantro mixed in with it without really recognizing that that's what they were eating. But I believe the associations were strong. That is, there was a difference between what ill people reported eating and what the healthy people reported eating. But neither for jalapenos nor for cilantro was it over half.
Yeah, not over half for the sick group.
Yes, for the
okay.
sick.
Okay,
that's
then,
right.
Right, and then the healthy group, but it's still statistically significant because presumably in the control group it was much less than half. I mean, how big
that's
was it?
Yes, that's right. There was a... It was substantially, whatever it was in the ill, it was substantially less in the well.
Okay.
That's right.
Okay, thank you.
All right, thanks, Allison. Next question, please.
Next question comes from Lauren Neergard. Your line is open.
Thank you. This question is for FDA. I'm wondering if you can tell us where these types of peppers would have been coming into the country or coming into distribution at different points in time during this outbreak, and also if you know if there are distribution points where tomatoes and peppers and cilantro would all intersect.
This is David Asherson at FDA. That's part of what we're trying to investigate right now is what are the potential sources for these peppers. Certainly, there are imported peppers coming into the U.S. at this point, and there are domestically grown peppers. So at this point, we've got no indication to suggest it's one or the other. That's what the traceback will tell us. As you've heard, there is evidence from the case control studies and the investigation CDC has done that the tomatoes caused illness, and now more recently that the jalapeno peppers have caused illness. And to your point is, what is the possibility of a crossover where they were both in the same place or passed through the same facility at the same time? And there's a number of possibilities there that will be part of the investigation. Number one, were they potentially grown on the same farm? Not necessarily at the same time, but if, for example, there was a contaminated processing system in a farm, or a farm was using contaminated water without adequate filtration, and they were growing tomatoes in the April, May time frame, and then they switched to jalapenos or those cod peppers in the latter time frame, but same problem persisted. That's the sort of question that we would need to address. And likewise, if there is any single distribution center where these would have passed through sequentially or together. So that really is, as before, as we work the trace back down from the point where the product was consumed, either the restaurant or bought from a store, as we work back through the trace back looking at those, we'll be looking for those points that intersect to try to answer your question. But at this point, that's essentially where the investigation is taking us, and we don't know yet.
Thank you.
All right, thanks, Lauren. Next question, please.
Next question is from John Rockoff. Your line is not open.
Thanks. I'm wondering about the difference in the warnings. With tomatoes, when you accumulated this evidence, you issued this nationwide warning for all sorts of consumers. But for jalapenos, you've issued a narrower warning. Why the difference?
Rob, would you like to take that?
Sure. This is Rob Tokes at CDC. Thank you for the question. I think there was a great deal more information about the specificity of the type of tomato and of the origin of the tomato in that recommendation. We don't have that information for the jalapenos now, and our trying to use the information that we have, the latest information, to protect those at greatest risk. It may be that as this information evolves, as more information becomes available about jalapenos, that this will also evolve. But we thought this was our way of protecting those at greatest risk as more information develops about jalapenos.
And why keep the tomato warning? From all the industry folks that I've spoken to, the totally different fields are being harvested for tomatoes now than were in April. Why keep the tomato warning around?
Well, we do not have epidemiologic information or evidence that takes tomatoes off the list.
Okay. Thanks, John. Next question, please.
Next question comes from Tiffany Hsu. Your line is open.
Okay, great. Thanks for taking my call. Is there going to be a separate list of clear states for the peppers, like the one that was put out for the tomatoes and is still being updated?
This is David Ashton at FDA. At this time, we have no plans for doing that. As you know, that was not what we have typically done in the past with outbreaks. And I think the strategy here is to aggressively pursue the tracebacks of the peppers, which we're doing right now, in the hope that we can identify a common source, get the testing done, and then essentially figure out the source quickly, which would exonerate the other places. So that's the strategy that we're pursuing at this point.
Okay. And then the follow-up is just, I had heard that there were investigators in Mexico over the weekend looking at tomatoes. I mean, what about the jalapenos? Are you sending investigators to any specific place right now for the peppers?
This is David Ashton again. You're right. We have had inspectors in Mexico, and we talked about that before. those inspectors are all now back home. So we don't have anybody in Mexico right now. We're continuing to talk to the Mexicans as this moves forward. We have, as before, started to dispatch inspectors to the point on the traceback where these peppers have passed through to gather records, to look to see if there may be problems. And then I think it's going to be dependent on where this traceback takes us as to where those inspectors will go. And certainly if there's good cause for inspectors to go and back to the potential growing areas, then we would do that.
Great, thanks.
Next question, please.
Next question comes from Elizabeth Weiss. Your line is open.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. A question on the tomato states. If you cross-referencing it, it looks like, with the exception of a few counties in Florida, none of the states that haven't been cleared actually have any kind of a commercial tomato production. They don't commercially produce tomatoes. Is that correct?
Steve, do you want to address that?
I'm sorry. So the question was, if the states that have been cleared, are they states that produce tomatoes or don't produce tomatoes?
No, I just went through and figured out which states haven't been cleared, and it's a very short list, and none of them, with the possible exception of Oregon, look to me like they could possibly be producing tomatoes.
Yeah, I think that's... Yeah. Hang on.
Let me
actually focus on those states that were actually producing tomatoes, and the ones that weren't... producing tomatoes, my guess is that they didn't ask specifically for us to clear them.
It's Arizona, Montana, North Dakota, Oregon, South Dakota, and Wyoming.
Let me try to, this is David Anderson again, let me try to clarify the process that evolved here. Is essentially when the outbreak started, there was a question about growing areas that were not in production when this outbreak kicked off in April and the early part of May. And that was the criteria that the list began with, was those growing areas that were coming online as the outbreak was well underway. And because of that, they weren't part of a possible pool where these contaminated tomatoes could have come from. Or they were producing tomatoes that weren't following the distribution pattern that we were seeing, i.e. they were produced in one state and maybe shipped to one neighboring state, or they were producing completely different types of tomatoes. As different growers' areas were coming online in the United States, they were saying, well, hey, you know, our tomatoes aren't part of this outbreak. How could they be? We weren't producing. And that was really the origins of trying to develop this exclusion list, as we called it. And some places were either not producing enough tomatoes or didn't feel the need to get on this list. So that's why you don't have every single state listed. Does that make sense to you?
Yeah. So effectively what you're saying is, from the looks of this list, there really aren't any major tomato production areas in the U.S. still producing tomatoes that are on the list of areas of concern.
That's an accurate statement, yeah.
Great, thank you.
Okay, next question, please.
Next question comes from Tom Karst. Your line is open.
Yes, thanks for taking my question. I had a question as far as, you know, what is the reason for the extended investigation? What's the breakdown? Has it been industry traceability standards, or is it more so the wrong theories and hypothesis about a single source contamination? Which is more at play here?
This is David Ashton. I think the answer to that is joint FDA, CDC, in terms of the length of this investigation. Clearly, as Dr. Toke said, this is a very large outbreak. It has certainly been one of the most complex that I've ever had any part of. And frankly, people have continued to get sick. We followed the usual trails. CDC, with the states and locals, did case control studies. They implicated tomatoes. We followed the usual track that we would do there, begin the tracebacks. We've talked about that extensively, the complexities of tracing back tomatoes, and one of the reasons those take so long, we've covered before, of the complexities of the tomato distribution system and the repacking. And that simply, as we were going out with the consumer advice, the outbreak didn't stop, and people were still getting sick. So CDC did their second case control study, and we've already talked about that, and the implication of other products. And so we are continuing now to pursue the tracebacks on those and the assignments of to try to find any positive samples. So it's just been a spectacularly complicated and prolonged outbreak. I don't have an explanation for it, but we have put as many, probably more people working on this. We've pursued all the usual angles that we would pursue. We've used all the tools multiple times. With a lot of collaboration with the states, the locals, with CDC, and with industry to try to figure this out. And then when we were visiting Mexico, again, the Mexican government were very cooperative working with us. So this is just basically very complicated. And we're not there yet, but there's a lot of hard work and to pursue it down to a point of trying to understand now where these jalapenos may have come from. I've gone on somewhat. Rob, do you have anything to add on that?
Well, I agree very much with what you just said. I would also add that one of the most powerful tools that we have for identifying a specific source of an infection is the investigation of a cluster, investigation of a whole group of people who were exposed on the same day or in the same place. And one of the striking things about this outbreak was that early on, there were very, very few clusters. There were none at all early on. In fact, there are entire states where we still do not have any clusters at all, despite a number of cases. And it was really with the continuation of the outbreak, as cases continued to occur, just as Dr. Acheson mentioned, and the identification then of specific clusters that meant that a whole group of people had been exposed to something in one place at one time. That's when we began to develop new information about this, both the outbreak itself continuing, and it, as far as we can tell, it's still continuing now, and the identification of clusters, which did not happen early on. It's an interesting and open question to us where clusters might be and why they began to be to occur and be recognized later in the investigation.
Thank you. Next question, please.
Next question comes from Vicki Vargas. Your line is open.
Hi, thanks for taking this. A little rumbling on the West Coast from growers using words like collateral damage when they talk about your inability to pinpoint a source. They're concerned, of course, that this will affect all avenues of produce in the long run. Reaction to that and to their call this week for agricultural investigations?
This is David Axton, FDA. Clearly, our mission, as is CDC's mission, is the mission of HHS, is to protect public health. Both agencies acted with the best information that they had at their disposal through the scientific tools that were used to implicate a product, a complicated case control study, and that simply by going out with the consumer advice on the tomatoes, the outbreak didn't stop, as we're all well aware. It was all done using the scientific approaches that we typically use, based on most likely, most probable. And I think it's very important to recognize, which is really part of the theme of today's new consumer messages, is that if we feel we've got strong enough evidence to warn consumers about a product that may be contaminated with salmonella, it's our job to do that. Not to go out too soon, we have to be sure, and not to point the finger, so to speak, at different products without good evidence. But I can assure you there was good evidence, and that's why we went down that road. Now, I recognize that there are consequences to this, but as you've heard, tomatoes are still part of the investigation, and there's plausible explanations why this could have been two products shifting from one to the other. With regard to inquiries, I said the other day on a conference call that we would certainly be initiating a task force to look at lessons learned from this going to the future. What can we do better? What can we do to reduce the likelihood of an outbreak being so protracted and so complicated and in the future? So unquestionably, there needs to be questions, and we welcome that in terms of trying to improve the system, which is what we're all about.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thanks. Next question, please.
Next question comes from Jim Downing with the Sacramento Bee. Your line is open.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I just have a question about timing. Is it, when you look back at the data from the first investigation from the people who got sick in May, is there any sign of jalapenos back in that first investigation, or does the data really show kind of a shift from tomatoes to this multiple products in the later illnesses?
I'll be glad to tackle that one, David. The early cases were investigated in the Southwest. The investigation in New Mexico and Texas. Our usual style, which is exactly what they did, is to talk to people in great detail about all the sorts of things that they might have eaten, and then pick out the ones that appear to be common, the ones that are named most frequently by people who are ill, and use that to conduct a case control study. A group of people, early cases, were interviewed in great detail, and there was a striking number of them that reported eating the raw tomatoes, and that became the primary hypothesis. A much smaller number, substantially less than half, flagged cilantro or other peppers on those initial interviews, and so the judgment at that time was that they were unlikely to be able to explain the outbreak, and it wasn't that they were ignored, it wasn't that they were not considered, it was that they were not reported frequently by people who were ill at the time of the very initial interviews.
And they're reported more frequently in the later interviews?
Well, the different people and different times.
Mm-hmm.
Cilantro is reported much more frequently recently than they were in that initial group. Yes, peppers have been focused on and are reported more frequently than in the initial group. But the questions were asked in different ways and in different groups of people. So it's very hard for us to say that peppers were absolutely not part of the problem initially. They may have been part of the problem initially, but not large enough to catch the attention of the investigators who were doing this initial phase of the investigation. And likewise, tomatoes have not disappeared now, and they still continue to be reported significantly more frequently by the ill people than by their healthy neighbors.
Thanks, Dr. Folks.
Thank you.
Next question, please.
Next question comes from Anna Shin with Washington Post. Your line is open.
Hi, thanks for taking my question. I've got a question and a follow-up. When you say jalapenos, when you're extrapolating, I guess, from the what you found in the cluster, and you're now saying that some illnesses are explained by jalapenos, can you give any more precise proportion, like, I don't know, a third of the cases, half the cases?
Thank you for that question. No, we really have not attempted to parse it out in those terms yet. We're at the phase of trying to establish whether they are sort of in or out as being an important part of the outbreak. Not at the phase of actually attributing a specific fraction to them.
Okay. And my follow-up is this. As you mentioned, there have been many questionnaires used for different groups of people by different investigators. And I understand that tomatoes jumped out in the initial case control, but I also understand that New Mexico saw a high correlation with salsa, as did Chicago with their case there. How confident are you that the early case control studies, how confident are you that jalapenos don't also explain the early studies, and maybe just the early studies, maybe they just didn't ask, I don't know, didn't ask the right questions. Or, as you said, maybe people just didn't realize they were eating jalapenos.
Right. There's several layers of uncertainty there than you just mentioned. Talking to epidemiologists is always a problem because they never are 100% confident of anything. But I think that an attempt was made to capture information, whether it succeeded or not is part of the question. Specifically about salsa, it's not unusual to find that people in the southwestern United States are eating salsa, and slightly over half of the cases reported eating salsa in the initial case control study, but that was far more than that, ate tomatoes, and we actually analyzed specifically if you in a multivariable model, which is this statistical method of sort of comparing these things one against each other in a model, comparing salsa with tomatoes. The tomatoes remained significant, and the salsa was not significant. So, a lot of people, cases and their healthy neighbors ate salsa, and the risk that we were measuring in our case control study appeared to relate to the tomatoes rather than to salsa.
Thanks,
okay,
Dr.
Stokes.
Thanks, Anna. Next question, please.
Next question is from Jane Zong with the Wall Street Journal. Your line is open.
Oh, hi, thanks for taking my call. I have two questions. The first one is for Dr. Tokes. I wonder if you could specify what you meant when you said that jalapeno peppers cause some illnesses, but they do not explain all illnesses. Was that because people do not remember what they ate a few weeks ago?
That's particularly coming from the information we have from clusters. The analysis of the clusters and detailed investigation of the of the largest clusters do indicate to us that illnesses in those clusters was strongly associated with jalapenos. But we are aware of other clusters in which it's very difficult to implicate or even suggest jalapenos were part of it because they were simply not on the menu.
Okay, thank you. The second question is for Dr. Atchison. Are you telling the industry to pull jalapeno peppers or cilantro or anything at all based on the new information?
This is David Atchison. No, we're not. The information, as Dr. Tokes said in the introductory comments, is targeted to the higher-risk populations, those who may be vulnerable. So there has not been a specific instruction or request from FDA to the industry to take any action. Clearly, as with any investigation, as we pursue it, if we were to identify a product that was incriminated very clearly, or obviously if some of our sampling shows up that a product that's still in the food supply is contaminated with salmonella, we would be requesting that industry to recall the product, but we're not there yet.
Right. So is it still your assessment that it's highly unlikely for the FDA to get to the source of the outbreak?
This is David again. I keep an open mind on that. We've got a lot of horses working this. We're very actively pursuing the pepper tracebacks. And I've always tried to remain optimistic, but be guarded in terms of, yeah, there's always the possibility that we won't know the answer to this, because history with outbreaks linked to fresh produce have been notoriously difficult to figure out, largely because by the time you know what the product is, it's been consumed or thrown out or gone rotten. So it is really difficult. But we're optimistic, and we're pursuing it as if we will find this. It's not like we're beginning to pull back at all.
Thanks, Dr. Atchison.
Thank you.
Thanks, Jenny. Next question, please.
Next question is from Steve Hedges with Chicago Tribune. Your line is open.
Yes, I had a question about the differences in the outbreaks. Some states have a number of outbreaks in restaurants, and others don't, even though they have a number of salmonella cases. Does that tell you anything about the distribution chain of the food involved?
This is David Atchison. The issue around the distribution chain is a really interesting one, and we have spent a lot of time interacting with industry, and we're continuing to do that, and we will continue to do that into the future, trying to understand if there's something in the distribution patterns that will help us figure this out. Because not only do we have your point about restaurants versus sporadic, but there are also pieces of the U.S. where there aren't many cases. If you look at the distribution maps up in some of the northern, northwestern states and some of the south, southeastern states, there are not as many cases as you see in other places. That begs the question, is there something about distribution of a product that is contributing to that? We've been trying to tease that apart, but so far I haven't come up with a lot that's really helped us figure out what it might be or where it may have come from.
Did you have a follow-up?
No, thank you.
Okay, thanks. Operator, we'll take two more questions.
Okay, our next question is Elizabeth Lee with Atlanta Journal. Your line is open.
Hi, thanks for taking that question. I'm still not real clear on what I seem to be hearing is jalapenos are suspected in the most recent illnesses. So why there isn't a warning to industry here or a broader consumer warning as there were with tomatoes, which I seem to be hearing that they're perhaps not a suspect in these most recent cases, that maybe they were associated with an earlier phase of the outbreak.
Rob, maybe you could address that again.
Oh, sorry.
I was just going to ask you to take that about the vulnerable population advice, but you're already on it. Thank you.
Right. You bet, Dave. Thank you for the question. Yes, I think we are assembling all the available information and have concentrated our efforts on the clusters that have occurred in the last month and on the cases that have occurred in the last month to understand what is the current sources of the investigation. And we're quite confident in this information, but it is rapidly accumulating. I would say also that in the very first notice that CDC issued about the tomatoes, which was back at the beginning of this whole outbreak, we issued very similar recommendations regarding tomatoes and high-risk populations, the very first recommendation that we made, and that was subsequently modified and modulated as more information became available. But this is not unlike what our first recommendation was concerning tomatoes.
Did you have a follow-up, Elizabeth?
I was really, I guess, looking more from the FDA's end because you had done that broader reaching out to industry, reaching out to restaurants saying don't serve these items, and it seems that we're in a similar situation that you've identified jalapeno peppers as the source of some of these illnesses, and yet you're not asking restaurants or industry to hold back, and I just wanted y'all to walk me through again why that was. I just wasn't real clear on that and why it's different this time than it was with tomatoes.
Well, this is David Ashton. It comes down to the point that Dr. Tokes has been making, that this is evolving, and that tomatoes began with a warning to vulnerable populations and then expanded into a more general consumer warning as we learned more, as the evidence that tomatoes were the cause initially strengthened. It is very evolving. We're at step one of this with the peppers, and as with the tomatoes, it may well evolve. My hope is that as the investigation unfolds, we will narrow it, and that's the purpose of all of the activities that are going on through the sampling, the inspections, the trace back, focusing very heavily on the clusters, trying to understand that, is that we will narrow this down to a particular type of pepper coming from a particular place. Then it becomes a very clear a piece of advice to consumers. At this stage, we're just not there yet, but it is a day-by-day, hour-by-hour investigation, and it could change. And speaking to that, I just want to let people know that we will be updating our website tonight with the new information.
Thank you, Dr. Atchison. Thank you, Elizabeth. Operator, we'll take a final call.
Okay, our last question comes from Miranda Hitty with WebMD. Your line is open.
Thank you. I know that we were talking a lot on the question and answer about jalapeno peppers, but just to confirm, the guidance is also for the raw serrano peppers, right? And then also, would this guidance apply to fresh salsa that someone might buy ready-made in a store?
This is Dr. Tokes at CDC. No, it would not. This is focusing on the fresh jalapeno pepper itself and on serrano pepper, which may be confused with jalapeno in a number of settings. It is not salsa specific, and it's not about commercial salsas or things that come in jars or that are prepared in stores.
All right. Miranda, did you have a follow-up?
No, that's it. I think everyone else covered it.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, that concludes today's media teleconference. Thanks for your participation. A replay will be available in about an hour and will be up for about 3 days. If you have any follow-up questions, please don't hesitate to call the respective agency. Thank you and have a great day.
Okay, this concludes today's conference. We thank you for your participation. At this time, you may disconnect your lines.